Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Most organizational change initiatives fail spectacularly at worst, or deliver lukewarm results at best. In his international bestseller, Leading Change, John Cotter revealed why change is so hard and provided an actionable 8-step process for implementing successful transformation. The book became the change Bible for managers worldwide. Now in his new book, A Sense of Urgency, Cotter shines the spotlight on the crucial first step in his framework, creating a sense of urgency by getting people to actually see and feel the need for change. John P. Cotter is the Konosuke Matsushita Professor of Leadership Emeritus at the Harvard Business School and is widely regarded as the world's foremost authority on leadership and change. He has been the premier voice on how the best organizations actually do change. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave.
Why write a book on urgency?
Around 15 years ago, I heard more and more from people that things were changing in their business or in the environment affecting their business. And so I started looking into it more. I found a distressing fact that as much as we can tell, about 70% of times when companies or parts of companies needed to undertake some kind of a significant change, they either didn't do it, they did it and failed, or they did it and succeeded at a level far less than their aspirations. We also found that in the 5 or 10% of the cases where it went well, there was actually a pattern. Didn't matter size of company, industry, profit, or nonprofit. It's all about urgency. I started digging into that more, trying to understand it better, talking to a lot of people that were struggling with it. What I found is not only is it the most troubling single change issue that people deal with, it's the one that even very smart and sophisticated people have difficulty with once they even understand they have a problem. The sense of urgency in their department, firm, whatever, is too low. They don't know exactly what to do. So we look into it, and we've tried to write it up.
And why is it such a difficult step?
The way that we've been taught, certainly we've taught it at business school for years, and I think corporations have taught you to think about areas like this, is get the data, make the decision, execute. There isn't an urgency piece in that. It's left off. And as a result, what we've been taught and what we've done simply hasn't had a component that we've learned from, that we've learned to do well, that we've been taught to do well, that we've seen our mentors do well, that has to do with urgency. And if that's the case, of course, it's like anything else. If you've never seen a bicycle and somebody throws one at you, you do a pretty poor job of figuring out what it is, much less riding it.
In the book, you talk about episodic and continuous change, and you point to this as influencing urgency. What role do these two topics play in urgency?
Episodic change means a project, a big deal. We're dumping in a new IT system. We're changing the whole marketing strategy. Continuous change means those things are coming at you or parts of the organization all the time. It's not just one big project every 4 years. Most of change that goes on inside companies today is episodic. But if there's a trend, it's very clearly slowly moving toward more of the continuous. In episodic, the urgency thing is huge because it's step one. People get it wrong all the time. But as you move to continuous, the whole idea of getting a sense of urgency up and keeping it up moves from a important step in a change process to, if you think about it, a key strategic asset that an organization will have that will have it dealing better with a faster moving world. It's important today, and I think it will move from just being a part of a change process to being a more generic organizational capability in the future.
Doesn't that mean that the ability to utilize urgency the right way is a competitive advantage for today's companies?
I would assume that being able to handle the urgency question well certainly helps you compete, especially if your competitors don't do it well. As we move into the future with more change and more continuous change, it will become a bigger and bigger competitive advantage.
In the book, you talk about constructive true urgency and then destructive false urgency. What's the difference?
When we talk about true urgency, we're talking about, first of all, a way of thinking that constantly looks at the world and sees opportunities and hazards that are important that you need to deal with. But more important than that, even, it's an emotional set that says quietly, internally, I am determined that we're going to deal with this problem or this opportunity, and we are going to win, and we're going to do it now. It's a powerful force, and that creates hyper-alert activity. It creates the sense of wanting to get up every day and saying, today we're going to do something. It may not be a big thing, but we're going to do something today to deal with this issue. It's this drive that's so strong that if your days start expanding to 10 or 11 hours, and nobody can handle that after a while, they stress out, it forces you to look at your whole calendar and to look at what are the low priority items and to start purging that off the calendar or delegating more so you've got the time to be able to do this stuff. False urgency, which is what most people see today and call urgency, which is a really tragic problem in companies, is a whole lot of activity. All the time, people come to me and I say, okay, this project is bogged down. That's why you're talking to me. What's the sense of urgency among the people involved? Oh, that's not the issue. It's very high. Okay. How do you know that? You just look at them. They're moving. They're running around. These guys are working long hours. Okay. Now, what are they doing? This is when the conversation kind of drips off into this, what they're doing. They're having a lot of meetings. It's activity, not productivity. It's stressing people out. And if you look at it in more detail, it's driven not by this kind of determination to move and win now. It's driven basically by anxiety, fear, frustration. People look at that all the time and say that's urgency. It's not. It's as destructive to making new things happen faster as is complacency, which is what we normally think of as the opposite of a sense of urgency.
You suggest starting with a strategy to address this panic and anxiety associated with destructive urgency. In your book, you referred to a heart and head strategy. Could you expand on that?
Great leaders, we are told, win over the hearts and minds of people. Let's deconstruct it. Hearts and minds, not minds, and not minds and hearts. What you find is, in the cases where people are making a lot of change happen smart, fast, winning, not stressing out, they are not only great at dealing with the urgency, but there is an implicit strategy involved. It's one that involves both sides of the brain, involves the mind and the heart, with a heavy emphasis on the heart. So it's the difference between, for example, saying our people are not urgent because they really don't pay enough attention to what's happening on the outside, what's happening to the technology or our customers. So we scoop up a whole bunch of data, maybe from consultants, maybe from our own people. We write it in this report, which, by the way, will bore anybody to death, that has 17,000 exhibits, and then we dump it on people's desks. Implicitly, it's this mind strategy. Usually all it does to the heart is it makes it kind of weep at best. A heart-mind strategy that works so well says, look at everything you're doing that's trying to raise urgency and ask the question, not only what is it doing in terms of convincing people in any logical sense that there is a problem and they have to behave differently, but what is it doing to them emotionally? And once you raise that question, it's amazing what it does, because all kinds of actions that might seem perfectly logical, including a lot of boring PowerPoint speeches, turn out to be not very helpful. And some things you wouldn't think of kind of pop into your head, and you can start doing more of that. it's a strategy, and once you get the idea, it's an interesting lens through which to look at actions or potential actions that you might take.
I would think that if you do the wrong things, you get complacency. What are some of the red flags that you've got a problem underway in your organization?
A good way to look for complacency and false urgency, there are lots of red flags. Once you got the idea that you should be looking for them, they're easy to see. Let me just give you a very brief example. Company's running into problems, margins are going down, senior management sees the data. First thing they do is they call in their chief strategy officer and say, we've got to get some good minds working on this. It's a big problem. Go out and ask for proposals from well-known consulting companies. We'll look at them. We'll choose one, et cetera. The whole thing takes a year. That is not a sense of urgency. Red flag. Another typical one. You appoint this group that's going to attack this problem. We got a big change. You guys are going to do it. They have their first meeting 6 weeks later, and the reason is schedule problems. Red flag. If the urgency was there, they would have found a way to make the meeting happen. A lot of it is just watch people's behavior. Don't watch what they say. Pay attention to what they do. Are they having those meetings? Are they delegating stuff to people who don't have the power to make anything happen? Are they putting together these ridiculous long PowerPoint presentations that put everybody to sleep? Or are they having good, intellectually and emotionally engaging, powerful, relevant discussions about the real issues?
You also get into situations where people get really anxious. Suddenly they're moving very fast and they're just trying to show senior management, see, we're doing something. That's a red flag too, isn't it?
Sure. Sit in on one of these meetings that are happening 16,000 per day and watch what the meeting's like. And you'll figure it out. Whether this is your basic false urgency, anxiety-driven mess, or if it's really something that is productive, driven by people who feel that gut-level determination to make something happen. It's not too difficult to see. Just watch how the meeting ends. Does it end with people saying, okay, here's what we're going to do. This is what I'm going to do today. What are you going to do next week? Okay, the next meeting has to be X because of Y. Let's pull out our calendars versus the way so many of our meetings end, which is in a...
John, in A Sense of Urgency, you offer four very interesting tactics to initiate large-scale change almost daily. Could you share those?
Sure, very briefly. One is what I call bringing the outside in. The disconnect between what's happening out there and what people see and talk about inside in companies can be breathtaking at times. And that's one of the reasons why you don't have urgency. Obviously, if people don't see the competition, if people don't see the technological opportunities, they're not going to have the same sense of urgency as if they do see it. So make the connection, bring the outside in. There are about 7 or 8 or 9 ways you can do that. Second is simply behaving urgent every day. It's role modeling. It's demonstrating not complacency. It's demonstrating not a false sense of urgency, but real urgency yourself. And all the time, as you're going down the hall, at lunch, in meetings, it's amazing the effect that that can have. Kind of sends little signals off to other people. The third is whenever crises are coming at you, always pause to at least look if there might not be an opportunity buried in there to help increase urgency. Don't assume there will be. The crises can just be bad. But always don't just say to yourself, call in the damage control guys. Spend a minute looking at it and thinking, is there an opportunity here? And the fourth is to spot those relentless people that exist everywhere who, for whatever psychological reasons, absolutely do everything to block needed changes, who just crush urgency. Their complacency building machines, and if they fail at that, they're good anxiety-creating machines to create the false urgency. It's deadly, and you have to deal with it. So those are the four basic categories that I think it's useful to talk about.
In your book, you talk about success killing urgency. What do you do about that?
One of the single biggest Maybe the biggest reason people become complacent is because of success. And it doesn't have to be success in the last 12 months. It could be decades of success decades ago. And that kind of grinds into the culture that we know what we're talking about. In the extreme cases, and we can think of some very visible ones in the United States, if you have a long enough string of successes, you can go downhill for 15 years and still have complacent people inside. It's hard to imagine, but that happens. So success creates growth, creates size, creates more junk that has to be managed internally so people turn in. They don't see the outside as much. Success creates this attitude quite logically. We're successful, we must be very good. Pride can turn to arrogance. Once you're arrogant, you don't listen to the outside. Why should we? We know everything. Success can give you a market position that's strong enough that you're not being hit hard by competitors. So that doesn't catch your attention. Crises aren't catching your attention. And smart, good, reasonable people end up complacent. And increasingly, in a faster moving world, especially in a more globalized world, and everything that's happening in China, et cetera, that complacency driven by past success is getting more and more dangerous.
John, you were talking about continuous change. How far can we push employees to achieve the kind of performance we want using the right sense of urgency?
I think when you have the positive sense of urgency, you don't need to push them. They want to do it. And they see it. There's either a hazard, I don't want to be hit by the hazard, or there's this wonderful opportunity, I want it, it helps me in my career and hence my family. And as a matter of fact, I'm determined to make it happen. And if that requires more hours, I'm not going to take it to the point where I'm not home when the son is graduating from high school. I'm going to have to find a way to get rid of the junk that's involved on my agenda. And I'll do so. Positive urgency helps deal with those situations. The problem so often today is people are just being dumped with more and more stuff through more and more channels like texting and email and everything else. And either they're complacent and therefore they're just mad. The world isn't fair. Or they've been whooshed into this what I call false urgency, where they just become very, very anxious. They're actually creating a lot of their own overworkload.
I want to thank Dr. John P. Cotter for being here and for sharing with us some of his insights from A Sense of Urgency. Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you, Dave.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanets.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.